The 1895 podcast is brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. The 1895, the official Shelburne podcast, exclusive to Patreon.
The ball sinks in towards where Davy Rogers is up. Rogers reads the left! Oh, Davy Rogers! Oh, what a goal by Davy Rogers!
I'm angry, Tony, I have to be honest.
Murray! Martin Shelburne! Noel Murray! Has she won it for the Reds? What a goal!
Here's a chance up. Shane Farrell at Chelsea 2-0.
I'm sorry, Tony, but I'm angry as well. I was angry before the game. I've been angry for a long time.
And she gets the winning goal here. Slattery into the back of the net. That is what champions do. That is what winners do. Pearl Slattery.
Over the top by Sullivan. Hughes, goal. Sheldon lead.
His cross sticks the biggest.
Kilduffy is the substitute and he scored! Shell's lead!
We are in to the 94th minute and yeah! It's all over!
Shelburne FC are first division champions!
It's our just reward. We deserve this. We deserve this big time.
Here's your host, Stephen Doody.
Hello, welcome back to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC. As always, we're brought to you in association with our proud media partners, Off the Ball. Get yourself over to offtheball.com for all the latest news, gossip, on any kind of sport it is that you are into. A busy week for the Reds. 2 out of 3 isn't bad to talk through all the action, starting from a great night last Friday. Reggie, how are you?
I'm good, Doody. How are you?
Not bad. And he's back to check on us again. Darren Cleary. Dazzler, how are you?
I'm only here because last week you said that if anyone had any complaints, to send them to me. And I'd like to reiterate that people should keep their complaints.
Or else pass them off to John Brennan.
John Brennan. Yeah, John Brennan loves your complaints. Now, he can't hear you and you can't hear him, but he's here.
He's just very softly spoken, that's all.
Very softly spoken.
Yes. Right, I probably have to do this in order of as the games happened, because otherwise we'd be jumping back and forward and I'll confuse myself. So let's start in Tolka last Friday night. A famous 1-0 win against the club from up the road. Reggie, sum it all up for me.
I'd say a very cagey match to start. I think you said it was like a chess match, especially in that first half. And then it definitely opened up in that second half, especially with the sending off. I think that really turned the tide of the game. And then, so as we took our chance, and they didn't. I don't really remember Kearns having to make many saves. I think he made one or two. And Levy just took his goal brilliantly.
Nail on the head, Reggie. We can probably move on.
Yeah, that's pretty much everything that happened. Nothing else of note. It was a great day. Uneventful. Nothing happened.
Dazzler. I mentioned there straight away, Reggie, the red card. Dazzler, talk me through the red card and try and explain to me how it wasn't a red card, because that seemed to be the stance a lot of people took.
This is funny, Doody, because like, as you both know, I have terrible eyesight. I'm blind as a bat. We were up in the gantry on commentary on Friday, and as soon as Connolly went in to JR with his hands that high, you knew he's in trouble. You knew if the referee was going to follow the letter of the law, it's a red card. And even as we've seen, we're like, that could be a red card. That doesn't look good. Declan Devine fumed after it. Bowles fans fumed after it. Obviously, there was some dispute about momentum and whether, you know, Tyreek pushed him in. Yeah, Tyreek probably gave him a bit of a nudge, but it doesn't matter. His hands are up high at an opposition player's face. It's going to be a red card. I don't understand the kind of discourse around it. It was quickly rejected, that new appeals process in place for a red card, and Bowles were told that the referee decision on the night was correct. I'm not sure what the confusion was. Like, I think if you give the referee the opportunity to see you strike an opponent, regardless of the situation, like, look at the chain of events. Eventually, like, effectively, Connolly is almost true one-on-one. He you would imagine with his pace and ability, he's probably going to score. He shits the bed somewhat. JR puts in a great tackle and a chance for him to put his team in front is gone. I just think it's a moment of frustration, a moment of madness, having missed what was up until that point the best chance of the game. And he lashed out and he got sent off for it. It's a stonewall for me.
The main argument I heard of why it should be overturned, I seem to hear a lot of, oh, well, he was pushed into him. Tariq pushed him into JR. Yeah, Tariq gives him a shove in the back, but he could have done anything else except what he did. He could have grabbed him. He could have just shouldered him. He could have literally done anything except raise his arm. And it wasn't even just a raised arm. It looked like he kind of threw it a little bit. So no arguments on the red card. Before we touch on the goal, Reggie, the atmosphere, I described it on the commentary as quite hostile. It was very a weird atmosphere. Maybe we're just not used to it because obviously we're a long time out of Premier Division, but there seems to be a real, and Bowls fans will pretend that it's not there, there seems to be a real hate starting to develop between the two clubs.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, if you were to ask me who my biggest rival is, I'd always say Bowes. I know people of maybe older generations would say Pats or Rovers, but for me, it's always been Bowes. And I think the whole kind of debacle with tickets and some antics on Twitter kind of added to that on Friday night, added to the crowd and the hostility. But yeah, I suppose, look, we got the win. I think that's all that matters.
That is all that matters. And the goal, when it did come eventually, when Cian Levy came on, I mentioned it, that this must be mad for him. He's probably gone from, you know, under 23 games or, you know, a cup game over there would probably be the most dramatic you'd get. I know he's been on the bench a few times for the first team, but there was a real venom in the crowd and it was a really, really good atmosphere, certainly from the Shells end. Dazzler, the goal itself, for Cian Levy of all players to come on and stick it in the back of the net, it was a really, really good finish. I think we got away from that a little bit just because of, you know, just the dramatics of scoring, but a really, really nice finish and a decent way for Cian to open his account in red.
Yeah, it's composed. He's clever in the way he turns back inside and it's just a neat little drive beyond the keeper. He hits it perfectly, even taking the shot on, because like at times in the four games we played this season, we can maybe hit one or two passes too many where you kind of would hope that, you know, maybe someone will gamble and have a go here. A bit like JR did up on the dock on Monday, which we'll get to. But I thought it's brave of him to come into that scenario and take the shot on, because if that goes balloons over the bar or is harmlessly into the keeper's gloves, you probably will get a bit of stick either from your teammates or from the line. But fair play to him. He showed an awful lot of maturity to take it on. Just on the atmosphere, like, you cannot discount the role Bowles played in creating that atmosphere, because they spent all week on the wind-up on the internet, all week talking about the Talca takeover, the tickets, and I've never heard Talca as loud from the home fans. Like, by 25 past half seven, the place was rocking, proper rocking. There was a crowd over in Section E. The Riverside was, I haven't experienced anything like it. It actually did remind me of the Hadrock split game many, many moons ago for atmosphere. And it was probably because we had to deal with so much shite during the week, so much talk, so much of this wind up. Then when it actually came to, you know, shit or get off the pot, we turned up in the stands, we turned up on the pitch, and they went back up the road with their tail between their legs.
That they did. And as an overall performance, look, it was a cagey enough game. It was tight. It was nip and tuck. Both teams kind of had their little patches. But Reggie, as an overall performance, we dropped off when we needed to drop off. We countered when we needed to counter. Jack Moylan looked really, really at it. He caused problems for Keith Buckley for most of the night. Stuck him on his arse at one stage over in front of Section A as well. It was a real complete performance. You probably couldn't pick out one outstanding performer, and you couldn't have picked out one player who was below par.
Just before Reggie jumps in on that one, Doody, I had clipped the little thing of Moylan bouncing Buckley onto his backside, and I was going to put it out Monday on the socials, bouncing into Monday, but I was advised against it. But I did enjoy that moment.
Yeah, you know me, I'm not into banter Twitter. It's not for me. I'm a bit bored when it comes to that.
It's not for you, but I thought it would have been funny.
Reggie, before you were so rudely interrupted.
Yeah, I think you're right. It wasn't like a standout performance from anyone. It was just a really good team performance. Like we attacked well as a unit, defended well as a unit. And to be honest, there wasn't really any stages where you were like, oh, Bows are on top here, like they're putting on a pile of pressure. Like there wasn't really any of that. It was I think we managed the game very well. We defended well, and we just didn't really give them a sniff. The only time I was really nervous was when Flores had that free kick in like the 92nd minute on the edge of the box, because he had scored from like that exact spot the week before. That was the only time I was kind of concerned.
Yeah, it was probably a telling of our performance that he did put that free kick over the bar in the end. Probably tells that they just weren't settled in the game. They weren't given a chance to settle. He obviously went and stuck one in the back of the net again against Drogheda. So, I mean, look, you could say it's lucky, or you could say that we just didn't let them get confident enough in the game where he was able to stick one in the top corner. But one player as well, and Dazzler, I know this was something we had all kind of talked about pre-season, and there was a massive question mark about, look, Clarkey left and how are you meant to replace him? And look, I'm not jumping the gun just yet, but Conor Cairns has been really, really, really solid for Shells. And all I want is a solid keeper. I don't want anything else. Don't need anything eccentric. Don't need anything like that. Just be confident. Do your bits and pieces and get us out. And for me, Connor's been brilliant so far.
He's been great. It's one of these things. I'm very happy that I don't know how good a shot stopper he is, because it means we're defending better. Like, there were times last year where teams were taking pot shots at us and we just weren't as organized as we could be. He's got the basics really, really down. He's more commanding of his box than I would have thought he would have been from what I'd seen of him, what little I had seen of him, to be fair. And he hasn't done anything wrong. Like, it, obviously his distribution is something that the manager highlighted, the length of his kicks, how accurate they are. He's been great. He's been really, really good. And the fact that he hasn't, you know, made a load of world-class saves is a good thing as well, because it probably shows that we are limiting other teams to very little in terms of real substantive chances. So it's always kind of, it's an unglamorous position. It can go under the radar when you have someone really accomplished and doing well in there. But when you have someone who's struggling, like we did at this time last season, it's really, really obvious when you have someone who's just not up to the grade. And Connor's the opposite. He's been great.
Yeah, one that showed that kind of difference between where we were this time last year, there was a pot shot from Adam McDonald from, he was a good 30-odd yards out, I'd say, and he just blasted it straight down Connor's neck. But if that was last year, I mean, that ball would have bounced everywhere and anywhere. It would have been like a game of pinball. Connor just held on to it, got it into his chest, and as you say, sent us down the other way. So he's been really good. I have a theory. Now, these theories never work out usually, but
it's not like the keeper who plays on their lights is none.
No, that was some spoofer telling me that. There was times in the Bowls game, and it happened out in Dundalk a few times as well. Now, I could be reading way too much into this. The manager spoke about how long the kickouts are. Connor's been launching them like down into the opposition half, but they've been going out of play for corners, right? Or for throw-ins, sorry. Mm. And the manager's applauding it. So I'm looking at it and I'm going, is this like some kind of
territory?
Yeah. Like, lump it up there. We can get set to defend against the throw-in. Because if we lump it straight down the middle, it's a 50-50 ball. And we don't obviously have Boydie's presence up there at the moment to cause hassle. So, I mean, is he doing it on purpose?
Dude, he don't be giving away the secrets.
They're not secrets. You can't stop him anyway. What are you going to do to stop him?
I don't know, but to be honest, it's a good idea, because it means that if you win the ball up high up the pitch, you have a chance to get your press set, and it's much easier to attack when you're kind of 30 yards out than it is when you're 40, 60 or playing a bit of head tennis. So I definitely think his distribution is so accurate, I wouldn't think he's hitting throw-ins accidentally.
Interesting, very interesting. So look, we got out there with a 1-0 win. it was whatever about being against Bowes, and look, everyone was delighted, as Reggie said, with the carry-on during the week. It was beautiful to get out of there with the 3 points, but that 3 points in the bigger picture, I think, was huge as well. I mentioned on the pod last week, it took us, I think, 6 games to get a home win last year. We've done it at the second time of asking this time around. I asked the manager about it after the game. He kind of, you'll notice, Dazzler gives you that kind of smile where it's like, he's not really giving too much away, but you could probably tell he was quite happy just to get the 3 points and move on. On the way out of Talca on Friday, it's been addressed now. Everyone will have seen during the week, there was a tweet sent out looking for suggestions on the music choice, basically, in the ground. Something that's been bandied about for a while that maybe it could be improved on. And look, we're not here bashing people. It's just, I just think it needs a bit of a revamp. There's plenty of Reds musicians out there. I mean, Mauro Picotto has become a bit of a cult icon now. So if anyone didn't see it, the link should still be there, where you can head on, and basically we were just looking for suggestions on how to change the music on a match night, because as much as I loved Caravan of Love, I don't think it's a great choice for after beating your North Dublin rivals 1-0. So that's one to keep an eye on. Actually, I know a random one before I move off that game. What on earth was David Gray doing in Talca? Can anyone tell me?
Sail away with me, Lonnie.
A JJ share in that. I don't know what I think about that.
Oh, it's it was a bit mad one, yeah. Like, David Gray was there, and it's probably, it tells you the kind of state of the Talca playlist is David Gray walked into the ground and we didn't play his music. Yeah, it was a strange one, but fair play to him. He enjoyed it. He did a couple of nights in Dublin, and then he was sent to Shell's jersey before he flew on to the next leg of his tour. So I believe he's an honorary Reds man. Enjoyed his experience enough to post it. I think it's the only time he's ever posted about anything that's not music on a social media or family. So he obviously enjoyed the Dublin Derby.
So the Shell's Festival now, we're going to have David Gray, Lily Allen, Mauro Picotto, For Those I Love, Pillow Queens. You never know, Beano might even get a shot on a side stage somewhere. I tell you, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's a mad little belters only too. Robbie G is a Red. So there's a lovely little kind of crew cooking up there for the first Shells Festival.
There seems to be. Get your names in. Anyone has any good suggestions, get them in. We'll move on to Saturday. I couldn't make it. I struggled to make Saturday games at the best of times. League opener for the Women's Premier Division side at home to Cork. And, I mean, it was a bit of a drubbing, to be fair. I don't think you could ever say a 6-0 isn't a drubbing. Siobhan Killeen on the score sheet. Megan Smith-Lynch got two. Kayla Hamrick. Is it Hamrick or Hamrich? Is anyone?
Hamrick, as far as I know.
Hamrick. Kayla Hamrick with a brace. And a 15-year-old Rebecca Devereaux came off the bench to become the Reds' youngest ever senior goal scorer.
That's amazing.
A successful day on Saturday, it's fair to say. You two boys were at it. I'll let you break it down for us.
I was not at it, dude, I'm afraid.
Reggie. Reggie. Dazzler, you're on your own.
Reggie was off playing with hockey or playing hockey or playing with hockey men. I don't know what he was doing, but he missed a game anyway. It was pretty routine, has to be said. Like, I think Cork came and made a whole heap of noise about how they'd fancied their chances and
biggest club in the country.
Yeah, the progress they had made off the field in the off season, blah 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 blah. I think a lot of teams did a lot of talking. I don't know how many interviews I read with Colly O'Neill, far too many, if you ask me. I didn't read 20 interviews with Noel King, I didn't read 20 interviews with Pearl, but they did their talking on the pitch. It's a really, really, really good performance. Took the goals well, limited them to virtually nothing. And it's probably a sign of your dominance when the opposition team go away home down the road, actually literally in tears.
Reggie, is it a bit dramatic to say that it was a big statement win in terms of, look, all the noise is around Rovers this year, a bit of noise around Wexford with some of the players they've signed. Is it too early to call that a statement win?
I think it could be considered a statement win. Like, if you look at the influx of players we've had, they've clearly gelled well together. if you compare that to the likes of Rovers and Wexford, they didn't blow anyone away this weekend. So the fact that we managed to do that and the other teams didn't, I think you could consider it a statement.
Rovers barely won, duty. Like, Rovers just about slinked in like a last-minute winner. I don't think there's probably a lot of media hype around them. They've generated an awful lot of it themselves. Like, coming in, you could probably put your head down and get your work done instead of going around banging your chest, telling everyone how great you are and how you're going to revolutionise the game after not doing anything in it for 10 years. But, yeah, I think Shells were the only team to really lay down a proper marker this year, and to do it in a way where you're one of your established players, like Megan Smith Lynch, is scoring a brace, someone who has been there, done it all, and won it all with Shells, Siobhan Killeen scores, and then you have one of the new players scoring, and then Rebecca Devereaux, youngest ever goal scorer for the Reds. It's on all those little things you'd measure to see how good a team is motoring. The established players are chipping in. The new players are coming through. The international players are bedding well. And one of your marquee return signings is among the goals. So I think if any team made a statement at the opening weekend, it was Shells by just doing it on the pitch and not in the press.
And how outrageous is it that a 15-year-old came off the bench and scored in the Women's Premier Division? That's incredible. It really is incredible. Like, a 15... to even be in a senior squad is unbelievably impressive. To be coming off the bench and netting at home with a decent crowd on the first day of the season, it's something fairly special for Rebecca Devereaux, it's probably fair to say.
That's amazing. It's absolutely incredible. Like, she was flagged as one to watch, to be fair, well in the season. It was thought that she would come through at some stage, but not this quickly, and not in a kind of way you'd expect to already be among the goals. There's a lot of praise for her from our academy coaches. You know, maturity, obviously you need a level of maturity to come into senior football at that age. You need a good head, you need a good kind of attitude and a good approach, and you need ability, and she has all of them things. So she's a very exciting player to have at the club. I think there's a load of people who deserve massive amounts of credit for being part of her journey to this moment and helping her with the development. There's too many to name, and I don't want to leave anyone out, so I won't start riffing off names. But it's a brilliant testament to the work being done at underage level in the club, where someone like that is coming on. It's not a tokenistic thing. They're coming on because they deserve to come on, and you can see that by the fact she had a goal-scoring debut.
And it's a Dublin derby double this weekend, because obviously the men's side are home to Shamrock Rovers on Friday night, and the women's Premier Division side are away to Bowes on Saturday. That's a 3 p.m. kickoff in Daly Mount. So I'm sure we'll have a decent crowd travel up the canal for it. There usually is. So get yourselves to Daly Mount. Lend your support, same way you do on Fridays. And hopefully it'll be 6 out of 6 for the girls to start the season. Monday, we didn't all yourselves were able to make the game. I, again, couldn't, unfortunately. Part-time fan. I'm just waiting for that to come out at some stage. It was away to Dundalk. All things considered, for an away midweek game, not the worst place to travel to, although it's an absolute... I won't, because if I start, I won't stop. Not the best place to travel to for a game. Ultimately, a 2-1 defeat. Reggie, a disappointing night considering how well we played in the first half, I thought.
Yeah, I think we came out and we caught Dundalk off guard a bit with how kind of forward thinking we played. Like, we were positive in how we played. We didn't just go up there to sit in and try and hold out for a point. We caught them out well with the goal. J.R. took it brilliantly. Like, Cam Ledwidge got the ball and just that diagonal pass that's really hard to defend, and Leahy couldn't deal with it. So J.R. was then in, and I have to say he did really well. He sat the keeper down in his arse and just tucked it away. I quite enjoyed it.
It was one of those ones for J.R. when the camera was quite slow to kind of catch up to the play. So all you kind of seen was Cam sending the long pass forward, and the camera panned really quickly. And I just presumed it was going to be Jack Moylan or Keane Levy or somebody like that running through, and it was JR. And I have to be honest, I went, oh, no, why couldn't it have been a Jack or even if Matty Smith was there or somebody like that. And as you say, the composure. I mean, you wouldn't have known that was a right wing back running through. And it looked like he'd gone too far at one stage and just a little shimmy to the side and a great finish. There was a lot of praise actually from a few different people I've heard during the week of the away support. You were obviously in it. How buoyant was it from Friday night?
Yeah, it was, especially for a Monday night. Like, as you said, it's like obviously not the worst place to go, but you'd rather not have to go there at all. But yeah, good support. I think maybe 300-400 Reds made the journey. And look, the lads were back to the end of the game, and we were unfortunate not to get a point out of it.
Well, we were brilliant in that first half. As you said, Reggie, we blew them apart. They couldn't live with us at times, and I wasn't expecting that performance. I was expecting us to go up there, break into that 5-3-2 and just sit back, see what we could do, stay in the game for as long as possible. But maybe this now is we're starting to see the results of Duffer being there for a year, so he's able to build on just that defensive end. Like, going forward, we were playing some unbelievable stuff at times. Now, I have to say, that lad playing centre-back for Dundalk, he was the right-sided centre-back. I think Waziri Williams, that's his name?
Yeah.
He was dire. We really got at him and caused him all sorts of problems. He really, really struggled altogether. But Dazzler, the start to the second half, it's... can understand why the manager was so frustrated. It's one of those, you know they're going to come out of traps early. Just maybe sit back a little bit and just soak up that bit of pressure. And it was a disappointing first goal to give away.
It was a poor first goal. It really felt like we, I'm not going to say it comes down to the desire thing, because I'm sure we don't want to concede, but like you have to defend them with everything you have. And it just felt like they played themselves back into it, got their goal a bit too easily. Like, we have to defend our own box better. We have to deal with crosses an awful lot better. It's probably one, you know, Connor's been very commanding of his area. Probably not much you kind of want your defenders to deal with that. Like, you don't want your keeper coming for something like that, especially something so low. And it is a bit of a sickener, because it's a very, very cheap goal to give away. It levels it up. It gives them all the impetus, because they're on the back foot. They could be 2-0 down at halftime, because we had another brilliant chance in that first half, and now they're back into it's all to play for. And we're not scrambling, but there's a sense of deja vu, because it's another cross, it's another poor enough goal, and it's another thing where you can maybe do a bit of finger pointing and say, you know, this is a result of one or two people just not doing what they're supposed to do properly, not doing the basics. So that was a frustrating element, and it's one that, like, you know, every other aspect of the performance was really good. Like, there are times where I would have worried, like, if we don't have Luke, we're going to be in absolute shambles. We weren't, but at the same time, I still think we lacked that little bit of composure for things like that, and that bit of leadership. And yeah, it's just a really, really disappointing one to give away.
Yeah, I actually have written in my notes here, not as much of a calamity this season if Luke doesn't play.
Yeah.
That was the way I put it. So
yeah,
Paddy Barrett was immense the other night. I thought, like, he kind of took over from Luke as that centre defender that kind of commanded everyone, and he didn't give Hooban a sniff when he came on. And I think, what was his name? Can't even remember their striker's name, but he had a hope when he was on the pitch. So I think Paddy Barrett did really well, and Andrew Quinn as well, making his debut. I think I'm going to retract my statement, dude, that I said to you.
Oh, you know what, Reggie? I was just about to say.
Well, hold on. Before you bury him, Quinn needs to do better for the second goal. An awful lot better.
The first goal, no?
Second goal. The Boyle header.
Yeah, see, I have a difference. That first goal, right, it was a weird one, because so close to, like, after halftime, Gav Malloy went really, really high, obviously trying to cut out Greg Sloggy. And then it was just a straight ball in to that lad Tullock, who was very, very good, in fairness to him. And then we were on the back foot from then, like, you're chasing your tail. In fairness to, this is another thing I actually need to address, is Andrew Quinn some kind of Andrew Cole job where you have to call him Andrew, or is he Andy, or what's the story there? Does anybody know?
No idea.
Because he's always down as Andrew Quinn everywhere. Going to have to get to the bottom of that one.
Reggie, why didn't you ask him? You spoke to him for about 7 seconds the last night.
I don't know. Clearly, I don't have your professionalism.
None of us do, Reggie. It's all right. But on that, when it eventually got through, I thought he did really well to win that first tackle. And then when it goes out wide, we just never really got set again in the box. And it kind of went between him and Paddy Barrett. So it's one of them. I'd probably be like you, Daz. I'd probably want to defend that front post a little bit better. But I thought, on the whole, Andrew Quinn was really, really good. Thought it was a really, really solid debut. Got loads of little nicks on the ball. He was good in possession. Stuck a lovely little back heel in the second half over in front of the dugout. So, Reggie, do you want to officially retract your statement now?
Yeah, I think I based that off.
And your comparison to a certain defender from last year?
Yeah. No, I'd argue they have the same run. Matters. I think that's what I got it from.
They have the same comparison. What?
They have the same running style.
What are you? That must be hockey speak. Running style.
No, pro dude. Gloves, dude. Yeah. You never play pro gloves. You can choose how your player runs.
Oh, Reggie, I'm not helping your case here at all.
They're a bit gangly, dude. Like a bit, like their limbs are a second behind their head.
Oh, yeah. Fella just made his debut. Really solid. Away to Dundalk, and the two lads are bleeding hammering him. Unbelievable.
Not hammering him.
He struck me better for the second goal.
You're saying he runs like a dope.
No, I didn't say that. I just said he runs like a certain player from last year.
Don't worry, Andrew. We won't ever let Reggie interview you again.
Well, hold on. Can we make a point, right? There's nothing worse than when players kind of give up or don't track back or just get lazy. Reggie needs to be called out. He just gave up the post-match interview after three questions. Fuck this. I'm going home. Yeah, Andrew, you can interview yourself. I'm off. I just gave up.
No comment.
Reggie. Now, see now, this is why I always have 5 or 6 questions written on my phone, just in case.
I had three, and then I couldn't think of anything more.
You didn't even ask him, how's he settled in? How's he finding the manager? How's he finding the full-time setup? Nothing, Reggie. What were you at?
He used to play for Dundalk, Reggie. You could have mentioned that.
He what?
He used to play for Dundalk.
That's a fair point, yeah.
Now, that'll serve you right for hammering Andrew Quinn in future, Reggie.
Yeah, Reggie. Fucking running style.
You agreed with me, Dazzler.
I agree that he had the same kind of mannerisms as Aaron O'Driscoll, in just that he could look a little bit awkward in turning with the ball at his feet.
Ah, look at you backtracking now.
No, I'm not. A bit like Tetris. You know, when it's kind of blocky.
Oh, this is taking a weird turn, I was going to say. But that second goal, definitely, we were just a bit soft. I thought, even letting players get right in on top of Conor Cairns like that, that's a no for me. Don't even let them near him. If somebody comes in trying to get into that 6-yard box, you lurry them out of that 6-yard box. Don't even let them in the first place. But I, do you know what I loved actually, Dazzler, in your post match with Duffer, was that you can do all the badges you want, you can do all the tactical speak you want, and sometimes it comes down to something as simple as, I don't know if everyone's seeing the interview or not, but Duffer basically said, if I'm marking Darren, Darren is not going to score. Sometimes it is just that simple. You strip it back and maybe that bit of desire or maybe switching off at the wrong time, but it was a criminal goal to give away, and Duffer seemed just distraught with the manner of the goals. Was that as soft a goal, Reggie, do you think, as everyone made it out to be?
Yeah, like, I don't think there was anyone outside of our 6-yard box. And Boyle just kind of strolled up and no one really attacked it with him. He just glanced it in. It was just, yeah, it was soft, really was soft. Just a frustrating one to concede, especially considering, like Duffer pointed out himself, like the goals we conceded last season from set pieces. So, like, it's just, yeah, as you said, or as Duffer said, like, it should be as simple as, if I'm marking whoever, they're not getting the ball.
And then the massive elephant in the room, Kyle Robinson with a brilliant, brilliant finish. That was a really underrated finish because obviously it was disallowed in the end. Good play from Shane Farrell in the build-up as well. It was a bad decision. I don't do referee bashing, but I suppose it's not the referee I'm bashing, it's the linesman. So I don't know where had you as a good vantage point at the time when it happened or whereabouts were you sitting, but even at first glance, it looked to be an absolute shocker.
I don't really know. I think I've kind of come to the conclusion that he's given the offside against Shane Farrell rather than Robinson. Because if you look at the clip again, he points at Farrell and kind of points at his head to indicate that because Farrell flicked it on. I think maybe that was what, because Robinson was definitely onside. So I think it could have been Farrell was coming back from an offside position, which you can't see on the camera.
Yeah, and I seen a few people actually online saying that Farrell was nowhere near offside even coming back. And they weren't Shells fans that said that either. So it's one of those ones, look, if it's not disallowed and we get out there with a 2-2, everyone's bouncing. What was the feeling like at full time? Was it down and out type feeling in the stand? Did you just feel, or was it more of a look, we might have been robbed of a point, let's just move on?
I think everyone was a bit taken aback by what happened after the full time whistle. I think Doody.
Yeah, let's go straight to that because I love a good schmuzzle. You can't beat it. It's great. And I was sitting. I watched the game with my dad, and I was shouting at the telly saying, will you zoom in? Just zoom in on it. Because I couldn't see what was going on. What does anyone know what sparked it or what kicked it off? Because everyone online, of course, blamed Duffer. Duffer said it himself in his post-match with, don't remember who it was with, it was another interview where he said, Asher, look, I wasn't even there. I was always shaking hands with the referee. But sure, it's still got to be my fault anyway. And there was never a truer word spoken because he did get all the blame online. But for the first phase of it, definitely, he was nowhere near it. So what kicked it off? What happened? Yuzel, obviously, Yuzel would have been hanging around after the game. So did you get any gossip from me or what?
I had a perfect vantage point. What happened was Damien Duff put Stevie O'Donnell in a sharpshooter. Graham Gartland called for the bell to ring early. And then a big schmoz kicked off. No, that's not what happened. I didn't see what happened. But afterwards, apparently, the Davey Mack was walking back to the dugout. I don't know, he'd been on the pitch or something, and some Doc Ford choice keeper got in his face celebrating, and there was a bit of a pushing and shoving, and then 20 people got involved, and then people who aren't involved, like in the backroom team, got involved. There's a video knocking around which shows
yes.
One particularly large welly making a tit of himself, which he did later on in the evening as it went on, but then afterwards continuing to try and fight Shell's backroom staff because he's a dope. It was one of these. There was very little in it. It was all just kind of pushing and shoving and running and people getting excited over nothing. Like, I did find the way Dundalk had celebrated, like, it's probably going to add a little bit of fuel to the fire, given that 3 minutes before that we'd had a perfectly good goal disallowed. We actually had a good vantage point. We were right in line because at the time we started to move Doody. You know what it's like when you're trying to get ready for post-match.
Yeah.
You want to get down pitch side soon enough. So we'd actually just started to move across the stand and we're pretty much in line with it. Farrell wasn't coming back from an offside position. I think Boyle got caught out and just threw his arm up as like a Hail Mary because he knew he was behind Robinson. He wasn't going to get anything on it. And I don't know. That line-up was bad all night, to be honest. There were a few other mistakes he had made. And generally, like, there were times, it was for both sides, like, we got a few easy frees that weren't frees, and there were a few tackles that went in on us that were fouls all day long that he didn't give. So I thought he was poor. The schmoz, there wasn't much in it. Like, I know there was a big deal made after it about, oh, the FAI will await the referee's report, the most non-story ever. The FAI await the referee's report after every single game. It's one of these things where you can create something out of nothing. So I don't think anything is going to come from it. I'd be shocked if it was pushing and shoving, nothing else aside, and it settled down. pretty quickly after. It's funny that it's a third choice goalkeeper that starts it, because it's always some goon who has no active involvement in it, as Stevie O'Donnell said afterwards in one of the interviews. None of us are hard men, so I don't know how something like that kicks off. But yeah, the manager was miles away from it, and he was actually easy to spot that he was nowhere near it, because he was wearing a different jacket to the rest of the back room and subs. So yeah, I thought it was funny when he got the blame on everything and drew the ire of one angry geriatric Dundalk fan who for some reason was intent on shouting abuse down during the interview.
The last time we were down there was last season, obviously, and at Lash Rain. It was the Conor Cain injury game, and they were falling all over themselves down there to get a photo with the manager. Do you remember that, Dazzler? Because we were pitch side after the game, because RTE were there. They were literally falling over themselves. They couldn't get near him quickly enough. And I don't know whether this lad missed out on a photo the last day or what the story was, but like, I loved that. Wasn't he shouting down during the stand that he was an embarrassment? St. Duffer was an embarrassment. This coming from a 50-odd-year-old bloke who everything's falling over.
He's more than that, dude. You were saying he missed out on a photo. The fella wouldn't have known how to take a photo.
It was
so bizarre. Like, he was so far away as well. He was like, had walked down the steps to go out the stand, and he just started shouting like in the middle of an interview. It was just.
And who defended our manager's honour, Reggie?
I suppose it was me.
You did, yeah, animal. I heard you on the most people, the naked ear wouldn't have heard it. I could hear you, Reggie. I could hear you sticking up for the manager. I'm sure he appreciates it.
The whole thing was just bizarre. Like, even going back to the schmozzle, like the steward that got involved. Like, why are stewards getting involved in that?
Yeah, you start pushing Cam.
It was more than that as well. Like, I don't like. It just really annoyed me. Like,
tell you, they were lucky Cam didn't go full Ballymun on them, or there would have been war.
I wouldn't pick on Cam. He has that kind of quiet psychopath look about him. You know, he's a good fella, but don't piss him off, you know.
I can mention this because it's already out there, because the man himself put it out there. Sean Boyd was obviously on LOI Central earlier on this morning. I don't know whether you heard it or not, but he said basically he was in the midst of a row in the tunnel, like handbags, as you said. But just as he was in the middle of that, Neil Doyle walked in, who was the fourth official, and was looking at him saying, why are you even in here? You shouldn't be here. But
he didn't close his eyes. He said it like out, like, Sean, what are you doing?
But you know what? It's funny. Boydie made a good point on LOI Central that, like, it's like when one goes to war, we're all going to war. Do you know, like, he wasn't going to stand around, and now a bit of that might just be Boydie loving to get involved as well, but like, I like to see it. I'm not gonna lie, I like to see it. If one is in, all are in. Get in there, do a bit of pushing and shoving. It was all a whole load of nothing in the end, and look, nothing will be done, because nobody's gonna want anything done. The two clubs will just say, no, it was nothing, it was just pushing and shoving, because that's all it actually was. An update actually on Boydie again. I can mention this because the man himself already mentioned it. He's going for his surgeries tomorrow. Travelling to London tomorrow, I think. Surgery Friday. And he said earlier on that should only be a couple of weeks out. Well, he said a few weeks. Weeks rather than months, hopefully. So that's probably a bit of good news, Dazzler, considering we've definitely missed him. Not as much, again, similar to the Lukey situation. We haven't missed him as much as maybe we thought we would. But definitely it'd be great to have him back.
It would be. And, you know, it was nice to hear that Owen Doyle was helpful enough to recommend a good surgeon to get that problem fixed. I think Doyle probably had it fixed. He was probably back playing.
Boydie will probably go over to London to get it done. It'd be bleeding Dr. Nick Riviera trying to do the op on him.
No, he's got the best of the best. I think he was 8 to 10 weeks was Doyle's turnaround, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong on that. But yeah, the sooner we have Boydie back, the better. But like, we have way more options this time round than last time. Robinson is lively. Levy is lively. Obviously, you have Jack, you have Maddie, you have Shane. Like, I think, you know, losing Boydie is unbelievably difficult, but I don't think it's a panic stations thing. Like, JR got the goal the last day. Levy got the goal on Friday. I think there is goals in the team. I'd guarantee Paddy Barrett will score a few this year. I don't know when, but I would imagine at some stage Paddy Barrett's going to score a header or two from a corner. or a free kick. So, yeah, it was funny. Boyd, we were chatting to him afterwards, and he was laughing about, he said he just grabbed two Dundalk people to stop them from kind of getting involved and then just wouldn't let them go. And then as soon as, you know, Neil Doyle walked over, he's like, I better let them go. And we're saying to him, why not just get suspended? Like, you get suspended for 10 games now, Grant, by the time you're fit, you'll be able to play. So
yeah, you should have been in there swinging chairs at people, no?
Diving, putting Steve O'Donnell in a crippler crossface.
It was actually, Reggie, it was interesting as well. I heard the manager in an interview saying that the referee wouldn't let him speak to him after the game. Now, look, that could be because there was after being a bit of a skirmish and all the rest of it, but I don't think it's a good look when the referee is refusing to speak to you after a game. I'm not into that. At least have the conversation and have it out like an adult. You know, that kind of, you can't talk to me. I'm not into that attitude at all. I just think that's showing a sign of guilt, or maybe a sign that he knew he had maybe made a balls of it.
That rest is just pure ignorance, that like they think they can't do anything wrong. It's one or the other, really. It just depends on which one it is, I suppose. But yeah, I don't see why they can't just sit down and like explain their decisions or whatever. Like, anything, that's what everyone wants. Like, as a player myself, like, if you get a foul against you, the umpire, you say what for, and the ref just doesn't say anything, you're going to get more annoyed than them actually explaining to you what it's for. So I think that's, like, it's just accountability, I think, really. It's just, it should be there for everyone.
As a player myself?
Oh, you know what I mean? Like,
you're not getting away with that one, Reggie, for fuck's sake. As a player myself.
Well, in terms of sports, Darren, is that allowed?
Yeah, it's allowed. I'm only slagging you. Dude, I think it's absolutely deplorable. I think it's a brutal attitude. It's unprofessional. Like, in no other professional environment could someone want to speak to you about something and you can say, no, get out, I'm not speaking to you. Like, they want respect. We're constantly told that, you know, we need to treat our officials better, but it's a two-way street. And if you treat someone like an idiot, you absolutely should get the very same back in spades. There's a mistake made, right? If he comes in and says, and look, if the manager's ranting and raving, yeah, then throw him out. He didn't seem like he was ranting and raving at any stage. He was fairly measured when he discussed it afterwards. He said, look, he's got it wrong. It's a goal. What can you do? It's happened a few times. What can we do? We get over it. But I don't think it's a good look to be seen to just refuse to engage. I think that's poor. I don't know if I can tell this story, but I'll do it anyway. We were after the cup final. I saw a referee in coppers. The referee made I gotta tell the story, dude. You might edit it out. The referee had made a mistake in a game involving us a few weeks previously. I had more than a few drinks on me, and I did something you should never do. This is when referees should throw you out. I went up and had a go, and to be fair, we had a chat and he explained exactly.
Hang on, I'm going to stop you there. You didn't really have a go, in fairness. It wasn't like... other people on that night in question were having a go at referees. You certainly were not one of them.
No, but
I also asked the same referee the same question.
I had said, you fucked up this big call and you cost us a point, maybe three. What the fuck were you thinking? So it was probably not a go compared to what the other go that the person had later on in the night, but it was a go. And to be fair, he could have said, go away, I don't know you, why are you talking to me, go away, leave me alone. But instead he's like, look, this is that situation. I had three options. I could have given a penalty against you, a free out, or a corner kick. I was not 100% sure what had happened. So the least disruptive or the least severe is the corner. I gave the corner.
But like, for me, that's enough. When you actually get it reasoned out to you, like if the referee had spoken to Duffer the other night and said, Damien, it wasn't for Kyle Robinson, it was for Shane Farrell. He was coming back from an offside. They'd say, all right, fair enough. Now I have to go watch the video back and see if that one's right. But at least it's a bit of communication. That's why I never rush to have a pop off refs, because most of them are football people. Generally speaking, most of them aren't bad away from the pitch. Most of them are quite sound when you're not actually near a pitch with them. So that's why I don't rush to do it. But that business of, I'm not talking to you, it stinks of like secondary school. You know, I know I'm wrong, but I'm just going to throw you out anyway, because that's the easy way to avoid any kind of confrontation. Not into it. I think it's, as you say, unprofessional. It's disrespectful. If Duffer refused to speak to somebody after a game, all hell would break loose. Every cretin from every corner of the country would be able to have a pop off him. So, yeah, just be sound. Be sound. Anyway, look, just came back down the M1 empty-handed. It was disappointing not to get something. The first half performance deserved all three. The second half performance, I'd still argue maybe we deserved a point, but all turns to Friday now. Ringsend Derby. Rovers are, it's probably dramatic to say they're all over the shop. I was only talking to a Rovers fan at work today who is laughing. Like, he's been through it all. He's done the first division, the whole lot. And he was just laughing, saying, people think we're on some kind of like downward spiral. He said, we were the better team against Derry. They just had better moments in the game. He said, we didn't play badly against Cork, just had four mad moments. So, I don't know. This one Friday is going to be a dodgy one. You're going to have a wounded animal coming out, hungry for 3 points. Reggie, are we going to get something out of the game?
I'd like to think so, yeah. Obviously, the players that we hadn't available on Monday hopefully are able to come back in, the likes of Farrell, Maddie Smith, Luke Byrne. And then, yeah, look, hopefully we can just get at Rovers. We played well both times at home against them last season. We were unlucky the first game not to get a point. Aaron Green just scored an absolute belter from, 25, 30 yards a few minutes ago. And then I think the drabbest game ever was the second game. So, yeah, I'd be optimistic enough for getting something out of the game.
I think we just need to be, if we can be as organised as we were in the Bowls game and in the first half of the Dundalk game, I think we've a great chance, a really, really good chance. But like the space we gave to that lad Tullock on Monday, you cannot give that to any of those Rovers players, because they're talented. They'll make you pay for mistakes like that. But Dazzler, how do you see us getting at them? How can we hurt them?
I think their defensive kind of limits at the moment, the players that they have missing are well known, well exposed. Like, I would be unbelievably optimistic about our chances on Friday. If I'd have told you, Doody, that we'd be going into Dundalk away without Shane Griffin, without Mark Coyle, without Sean Boyd, with, you know, Matty Smith, Luke Byrne, Shane Farrell on the bench, and we'd still have a good starting 11, one that you'd look at and say, we have a chance here, and we'd get out of there potentially with a point we deserved. Like, I think we have that bit of depth now. Obviously, it's been tested with the bodies that are out, but I don't think we have anything to fear from Rovers. I think they are having a bit of a rough patch. They've conceded a few goals over the last few weeks. You'd expect they'll probably shore up their defence a bit, but they're not due to be welcoming back any big names in time for it. So I think we can get at them. I think just take your chances. Like, Keane Levy came on the last day against Bowes, and, you know, we had one chance. We scored one goal. I think gamble a bit. Obviously, set it up on a foundation of being kind of hard to break down, hard to play. But at the same time, we get width from JR, Tyreek. Evan was putting in a serious shift in that centre forward position. I don't think he's a goal scoring threat, but what he brings outside of that is those little balls, pulling people out of place, creating space for other. I'd be confident, not of winning the game, not of definitely drawing the game, but like, there were times we used to approach games last year where you'd be like, oh Jesus, this might be great. We could get, you know, we might get turned over here. But no, I wouldn't have any kind of fear after how we've played over the last few weeks.
In terms of the team and the starting 11, there's obviously a couple of changes. Monday night, Keane Levy obviously came into the team. Cam came into the team. Did the two boys do enough to keep those spots? I would presume Lukey comes straight back in. I mean, if Lukey's fit, he has to play. Anyone else starting to stake claim maybe for starting? Like, Matty Smith came off the bench, looked as usual, lively. does Matty come straight back into the team? Does Matty stay on the bench, give you an option coming off? Like, Kyle Robinson has impressed me every time he's come on. He's been a handful. Do you throw him in there to have a focal point? I mean, Reggie, what way do you see us going?
I think firstly it's down to the injuries we had. Like, yeah, I'd assume Luke comes straight back in, but who do you drop out there? Like, does he keep Cam or does he keep Andrew Quinn? Paddy Barrett also looked like he was struggling with an injury towards the end of the game, so if he's fit is another thing. So yeah, there's just, I'd say there's a lot of question marks about availability before you'd even get into picking that team. But yeah, Matty Smith, like, if you're bringing him in, who'd you drop out? Like, I think it's whoever drops out would be hard done by to be dropped out. So yeah, that's why Duffer has paid the money to do the job picking that team.
And again, it's probably a sign of buffing that squad out a little bit, in that it's not a complete calamity that we don't have Sean Boyd. We were able to not play Luke on Monday. You have all these options, these kind of, oh, you could do this, you could do that. Shape-wise, Evan Caffrey, to me, seemed to play more like an extra midfielder on Monday. I wonder, Dazzler, does he go with that again, try and crowd out Rovers, or because we're at home, does he go with the kind of front three, if you like, and have a proper pop-off Rovers?
I think the first thing he'll do is, I'm not sure if Cam or Quinn will play. I'd say Gav Malloy will probably come back into that back three. He did well in midfield. The only thing is when Malloy moved into midfield, when Cam came on against Bowes, when Kyle went off injured, I thought that gave us a bit more energy, a bit more direct running against Bowes. So I do think that Gav Malloy is the strongest of the defensive options. That being my preferred back three, but you do lose a bit in midfield with him then. I don't know what the sus is with Kyle, if he'll be back. It didn't look like it would be a shaken and a weak kind of injury. He looked to be in a lot of discomfort when he went off the last day. I wonder if Evan Caffrey kind of dropping back into midfield and crowding that out, is that because he's not obviously an out-and-out centre forward, and maybe leaving spaces for the likes of your Moylan or your Levy. I think he's done the role well, but without being an attacking threat, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think going into the game, though, if we're going to be under pressure for like long spells, which you probably would expect just with the way Rovers play, it naturally kind of goes that way. I'd like to see Cam playing because he gives you such an out with his running. Like, he'll dribble a ball 20, 30, 35 yards for you, no problem. That can take an awful lot of pressure off. It might be another reason why I'd love to see Kyle Robinson, just because you can play balls in behind if you're under the cosh. He gives you that option in behind. He's lightning quick. And by all reports, he's a bit of a nuisance to play against. A bit of a wind-up merchant. Look, there, a couple of bodies suspended. Kyle Robinson might just be able to rattle a few cages and maybe throw a few people off. But it is, as you say, it's all down to fitness. It's a bit of an up-in-the-air type of starting 11 job. But I have to push us for predictions. Reggie?
I'll go 1-1 again.
Ooh, Dazzler?
Going to go the Reds to scrape a 1-0. Robinson to score. I hate the term, but I do think we look stronger with him finishing the game, because to have that option to spring from the bench when legs are starting to get tired, I think it's a good one. If we start with Robinson and Levy, Shane Farrell, Jack, Matty, obviously you can't accommodate all of them, but you just want to have something that if they're coming on, you know, all right, these are going to cause hassle. I don't know if Evan's not the player to do that, to come on at 60 minutes and, you know, potentially create a goal scoring opportunity or score himself. So I probably would keep Robinson on the bench.
I'm presuming it's going to be a sellout.
Yeah, it's going to sell out in the next 24 hours. Very, very close to sell out. Please, if you want to go to the game, buy your ticket. Don't leave it to Friday. Don't expect that a Bose boogeyman is buying all your tickets. They'll sell out from Shells fans. Just buy your ticket.
Wonderful. Any other bits of business around the club, Dazzler? You're our man for that type of stuff.
Playlist is a big one. Yeah, trying to improve the Tolka match day experience. Over 200 submissions, brilliant submissions. Hope to have something in place on Friday that's more reflective of the tastes of the fan base and some of the songs that have kind of become unofficial anthems. More Picado, less Caravan of Love. Golden Slumbers can be resigned to the history books. Probably the worst walk home song I've ever heard. But yeah, we're trying to improve the match day playlist. So anyone who's got involved in that and sent in a submission, it's greatly appreciated. Hopefully we'll see the fruits of that on Friday night. I don't know, afterwards, the last night, Kieran McHugh brought a little speaker into the bar and the place was on wheels. So that's going to happen again after this Friday's game. A little bit of music, bit of crack in the bar afterwards. So yeah, enjoy the Friday night.
I almost forgot the Wally of the Week.
Oh, there's a few contenders, is there?
There is. I have decided on one. A close runner-up was the goon, Stewart, who decided to put his hands on Cam Ledwich. That was very, very strange. Didn't understand it at all. But the real Wally of the Week. Dazzler, are you ready for this one?
Go on.
We all know who he is, and he made sure on his way out of Tolka last Friday night that he asked everyone, did they know who he is? So there we have it, the pod for this week. Thanks a million for giving up your evenings. I appreciate it.
Can I suggest a Wally of the Week?
Oh, go on.
Your man who says every interview he does is explosive.
Oh, like, dear.
That is just... the amount of times I read about an explosive interview this week, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I listened into that interview and there's nothing explosive in it. Like, it's just, we don't need any clickbait in the League of Ireland. Like, we're probably going to listen to all of the League of Ireland content. Like, I listened to Johnny and Dan's podcast. I listened to a good few of them. You don't need to reel us in by saying Damien Duff is going to give an explosive interview about the state of refereeing in Ireland, because he's not. And again, you're just trying to create a negative connotation around the football club. So my Wally of the Week is the explosive clickbait podcaster.
Right, mine is the politician who was led out of Tolka last Friday night. Reggie, give us a Wally show while you're there. There's plenty of Wallys knocking around.
That idiot shouting down in the middle of an interview. Colin Duffer in embarrassment. Just embarrassed himself. Dope.
Do you know what, though? It's actually, Duty, you'll remember this from the lockdown game. Do you remember you used to go to grounds and people would be happy to see you and they'd be friendly and, oh, how are you getting on, lads? Great to see you. And they were happy that you were there. Like, even up in Derry last year, everyone was so nice to us. I don't think people are going to be nice to Shells anymore.
No, yeah, that's finished now. We're definitely the bastards of the league again.
Yeah, we're not going to get that warm welcome we used to get. Like that, I think that soft Shells, you know, old Gil and the Simpsons, oh, we nearly won a football match. I think that's gone. Like, walking out the last day, like, Pats got hammered there 5-0 and got absolutely, like, kicked around. And we lose narrowly 2-1, should have got a 2-2 draw. But there's no kind of sense, oh, geez, isn't it great that we played well on a Monday night? It was very much... the team were very pissed off to lose. I'd say it was a miserable bus journey home. And I think that mentality, people will start to see it come true properly over the next few months. But there's a real kind of, we are not here for moral victories. We are not here to just stay up. There's a steel and a hardness developing around the team. And it's really good to see.
Long may it continue. Reggie, thank you very much for giving up your Wednesday. You probably had hockey you could be playing, but you decided to join us instead. Thank you.
No, I'm just going to go watch the Champions League, Duty.
Dazzler, you're married, so you'll always be free for a podcast now.
Is that how it works?
Yes. Yes, yes, it is. And I'm not even married yet. No comment is a wise comment.
I don't know what to say to that. The first time ever, I'm speechless. It doesn't happen.
That is a rare occasion.
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone enjoy a speechless Darren Cleary while you can, because it certainly won't happen again soon. Oh, do we have commentators for Friday?
Yes.
Who the are
return,
they?
The return of Tony Sheridan, the great Tony Sheridan, who was almost ejected from Section E last week by Shells fans. Myself, Tony Gagan, and Stephen Gagan and Declan Gagan, Tony Sheridan, went to watch the game and enjoyed it. So Shero's back in the commentary box alongside Reds stalwart Adam Leonard, and thanks to Shauna Cook and Dave Armstrong, who were in the box last Saturday for the big one against Cork.
Brilliant. Lads, last time I'm thanking you, thank you very, very much for giving up your time. See you on Friday. Up the
this
Reds.
This podcast was brought to you by Off the Ball, official media partner of Shelburne FC. For all the latest sports news, visit otbsports.com. Rest in the-